Big show for you today. Boone June continues. I'm holding down the fort while Harmon enjoys a much-deserved vacation. But the lineup of great guests, it continues this month with Rich Rebar of Sharp Football Analysis. Rich and I continue our Flip the Script series. We have some fun going over the candidates for who could be this year's Javonte Williams. So a running back that drastically outproduces ADP and finishes as a strong starter, maybe even an RB1. Rich and I also go through our thoughts on the RB dead zone and when that RB cliff comes. And we discuss the latest development in the Brendan Sorsby saga, including how you should be approaching him in your dynasty leagues and what you can do if you've already completed your rookie draft, which I know a lot of you have. So settle in. We got a lot to cover. Let's get to it. What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. I'm Justin Boone, filling in once again for Matt Harmon, who is just off gallivanting around the world. Last I saw, he was at a wedding in a far-off land. It is awesome to see him out there having a great time. I also know we are going to have a great time on today's show because our guest is fantasy royalty. Lord Reeves, Rich Rebar of Sharp Football Analysis. Rich, welcome back to the show, buddy. How you doing?
Yeah, it's great to be on with you. Anytime I get to hang out with you, I'll always jump at the chance. We've got to meet in person now twice in the past year, and I don't know if you'll let there be a third time.
No, man, there are a few people on the list of when I see them across the room walking towards me, just the smile comes over the face. I'm so excited. I know it's going to be a great night. You very quickly got on to that list, man. And the last time we got to hang out was the combine, of course. Even producer Colin was there, and he got a little taste of what a night out with Rich Rebar is like. We had a ton of fun, Harmon too. So I know it's going to be a great show today. I'm very excited to talk through a bunch of stuff, man. We got a lot to go over here. You know, we've been doing our Flip the Script series, and that started with Harmon and I a couple weeks ago, figuring out who could be this year's George Pickens. We had JJ Zacharyson and I go over last week and come up with who we thought is going to be this year's Drake May. I recommend everybody go check out those shows. You can go back and listen to them. You can go check them out on the Yahoo Fantasy YouTube channel. You should be subscribed there already. If you're not, please correct that if you are not, because there's lots of great content on there, and we are only going to be putting out more as the season gets closer here. But today, Rich, we're going to try and identify who we think is going to be this year's Javonte Williams. So a running back going outside of the top 24 at the position who could potentially finish as an RB1 in fantasy, or at least a very strong fantasy starter. And like I said, there's a lot of names to go over for this one. We had some in the other episodes. I think a lot of them you could kind of just quickly dismiss. This one, I think it's going to be a little harder to narrow it down to just three finalists and then to potentially pick a winner. So I'm glad you are here to help us with that. We're also going to go through some of our thoughts on the RB cliff and the RB dead zone and where those areas begin. And we're going to talk through what we might have learned from Javonte Williams' season last year and how we could potentially apply that to trying to figure out who could be the Javonte Williams of 2026. And maybe even we'll talk about what he's capable of this year, because producer Colin is a Cowboys fan and he will try to get us talking about as many Cowboys players as we possibly can on this show. But first, we got to talk about Brendan Sorsby. And this is such a weird story. Hopefully everybody listening knows who that is. This is a college player, a Texas Tech transfer. Now he plans to enter the NFL supplemental draft, according to Yahoo's Ross Dellinger. And this comes, and I will do a very quick version of the story because there's a lot of detail. You can go read Ross's story if you want all of that detail. But this comes after he was facing a potential NCAA ban after alleged gambling violations. The NCAA denied his appeal. There was a judge that ruled in favor of him and an injunction against the NCAA. That would have made him eligible to play. Then there was this overnight legal filing that sort of threw a wrench in that. Again, I'm really giving you the short version here. We're trying to just go through that part quickly so that we can actually talk about it. But in the end, now he wants to go pro, and assuming the league grants him that exemption, we will see him in the NFL supplemental draft. And it's been a minute, Rich, since we've seen a player taken in the NFL supplemental draft, and really someone taken in that draft that has serious fantasy implications, right? Like, we could go back to Josh Gordon. The Browns took him in round two of the supplemental draft back in 2012. Terrell Pryor the year before that to the Raiders. They took him with a third round pick. But this is kind of new ground when we're talking about a guy that might have been a round one quarterback in the real NFL draft, depending how things went this year, and who could potentially be like a legit franchise quarterback. Some people see him that way. I don't know if I'm quite as high on him. I would have liked to see him go out there this year and kind of solidify that. But Rich, let's start. What are your thoughts on Sorsby? How talented is he in your opinion? And what do you think is going to happen here? Where do you think he'll go in the supplemental draft? If of course he does end up there, which right now it seems pretty likely, and maybe even, you know, who are some of the teams you think could be interested?
Yeah, I'm flying a little bit blind here just because I don't invest a lot into like the college football season. I do a lot of my, you know, draft work backwards just because I'm doing so much NFL work during college football. Having a family, it's hard to just punt Saturdays completely. So I'm like not familiar with like digging into him because he wasn't in this draft class. So I plugged him in, you know, with this news kind of dropping, you know, the last couple of days. I plugged him in to just like my quarterback model to see where he kind of stood out. And, you know, granted, that's not the be all end all, but just, you know, just kind of an objective take on where he sits. And he is comparable to guys in my model, like a Cody Kessler, Desmond Ridder, Quinn Ewers is in here, Brian Brohm. So like kind of in that group of guys, like not a lot of real big hits in that. I saw Dane Brugler said first round talent, kind of fourth round player. It seems like the consensus vibes that if there was a team to use a pick on him, it would be like rounds 2 through 4, kind of in that area. So typically not like a high hit rate of guys that would kind of, you know, deliver. And so I'll do some more digging, you know, throughout the rest of this week and, you know, as we get prepared here. But I am still like we're working way behind on him from an actual like scouting him out from a film perspective.
Yeah, don't feel bad, man. I'm the exact same way. We put all the focus into the NFL and then January comes around and we're trying to play catch up when it comes to the college prospects. And we definitely dive in at that point, but we're getting to it a little bit later than some of the analysts that are doing it year round. I also will say like next year's draft class is supposed to be a pretty good one. So how will that impact how teams are feeling about this, right? And whether they're willing to use a higher pick on a guy like this or whether it does get pushed back a little more. I think though, like round 3, round 4, if we're talking about a quarterback that could have a chance to potentially be a starter for a team, we know there's a bunch of teams that could use help at quarterback, whether it's, you know, the Browns, the Jets. I mean, the Steelers are still kind of looking for who that could be. And we saw some teams take guys in that range of the real life draft this year. But again, going back to like some of those names you just mentioned, if a guy's not going in the first round of the NFL draft, or at least like very early in the second, but if guys aren't going in the first round of the NFL draft, the hit rate is just so low for them to become a real strong starter. We see it happen and we always remember the guys who hit. We remember the Tom Brady's and the Russell Wilson's and these guys that come on and have great careers. But there's so many guys that get taken after day one of the draft that don't really amount to much. So I think people should remember that. Also remember, whenever we're talking about prospects, that guys get pushed up because their name is in the headlines. We see it happen with like free agency in the NFL too, right? Sometimes we overvalue guys that are free agents and get signed to big contracts because we continuously saw their name in headlines all offseason long and people aren't looking at it and providing the correct context. On top of that, there's like agents and everything trying to push up their value so that they can get more money and all that sort of stuff. So there's a lot of things to consider there. We will continue to update that situation as we get more. I think the other aspect of this, though, Rich, is what should people do in their dynasty leagues? Because a lot of leagues have already done their rookie drafts for this year. So it kind of puts people in a weird position. I think there's like 3 potential approaches, right? I think you could either just let them process through waivers, which to me is like kind of boring, but you could do it. That's sort of like the lazy man's approach. You could just totally block him this year and, you know, hold him until next season and let him enter at that point, which to me feels a little odd. And then there's the third one that will take a little bit of work, but I think is the most fun. And that's do your own supplemental draft, right? And the commissioner is going to have to actually figure this out. But I think that's the approach. I think, and we have up on the screen for anybody watching, Ryan McDowell of Dynasty League Football, really good dynasty analyst, been doing it for a long time. This was a form that he has created that he's going to be using in his leagues where you put in a bid, you use 2027 rookie picks, you use your waiver money, your fab dollars, and you fill out your bid in a blind bid format and then submit it. And hopefully, you know, you have the ties broken that way, because you can put in what round of pick you want to use. And then you can also put in how much fab budget you want to put towards it. It's a little more complicated, but isn't it more fun, Rich? I think that's what people should be doing.
Yeah, I played in a number of leagues with Ryan, and he used a similar format like this for bidding for like a restricted free agency pool. So this makes a lot of sense, where he actually has done the math and shown like what amount of fab is worth like in terms of rookie picks. So this one does make a lot of sense to me. The two that I'm in that we're adding him in is, one, we're doing kind of like the supplemental pick where it's like, hey, if you want to say you're going to use next year's second on him, and no one else did, then you get him. And the other one is just like going through waivers, like you said, which is boring. But I'm also in a couple that run the draft before the actual NFL draft, which I think is the best format to do dynasty football, because you don't get bailed out by the NFL draft. So we already had some good players already in there that just, you know, stuck in through draft capital alone, right? Like when Caleb Douglas goes to the third round, you're like, all right, well, he's going to be a pickup. He's going to be a pickup when the waivers come around. So him jumping into waivers and that is not that big a deal, because there always are some hot names that end up getting some kind of funky draft capital every year.
Well, I also tell people too, and I feel like I say this a bunch on the show, but you should be having fun with this. Like, sometimes we talk about fantasy football and dynasty, especially where we're always trying to win. And don't get me wrong, I'm like the most competitive person out there, but still, like, have some fun with it. If you can come up with a way like this to kind of make it more enjoyable and make it more interesting, just take a little bit of extra effort and do that. And I'll also say, our buddy Ian Harditz, I commission league with him in it. And he was messaging me this morning going like, are we going to do a supplemental draft? Are we going to do a supplemental draft? So I think he is interested in Sorsby. And we're definitely going to do a supplemental draft in that one. So like I said, we're going to continue to update this situation here. There's going to be more that comes out on this, including a potential pro day that he might have. There's going to be lots of stuff to talk about. And then once we figure out where his landing spot will be, that'll be even another step, but we will go over all of that when it happens. Don't worry, folks. Just want to mention it off the top here, because I thought it was an interesting piece of news that came out yesterday. And this time of year, we're not getting that many pieces of news that we would talk about off the top of the show. But we're going to take our first break here. When we come back, Rich and I are going to start digging into the running back position, including where the running back cliff is in 2026 drafts, right after this. We are back with Rich Rebar of Sharp Football, one of the best analysts in the industry. And Rich, whenever the running back conversation comes up, I feel like I get two big questions from people every year now. And it wasn't like this a long time ago. I think this is more, you know, in the last 5-6 years, people want to know, where's that running back cliff and where's the running back dead zone? Like, these terms that have kind of been, you know, become more, a little more popular in recent years. So I'm curious where you see those existing this year. And for the running back cliff, in my mind, I think we're pretty solid through like 24 running backs. I kind of feel pretty good about that. Would take us to DeAndre Swift. Then we have Jadarian Price at RB25, Bashaul Tutin at RB26, Chuba Hubbard at RB27, Ramondre Stevenson next at RB28, and RJ Harvey at RB29. We're going to get into some of the specifics about these backfields and about these running backs in a bit here, but where do you see the running back cliff in this year's draft? Is it in that range? Is it earlier? Is it somewhere else? How are you viewing this?
Yeah, the running back dead zone is a very nebulous definition, you know, depending, you know, what streets you kind of come from or how you adhere it. But, you know, when it first kind of originated, I think for a lot of gamers was, you know, a lot from like the Sean Siegel anti-fragility, you know, zero RB kind of, you know, spike. And what has happened, though, you know, post-COVID in from terms of an NFL meta stance has shifted so much. Typically, like the way I've always treated the dead zone was that kind of RB2-ish zone, or when the running back position started to fall behind the wide receiver position in terms of, you know, outright scoring. I mean, if you were have been in a league that, you know, is inherently, you know, started three wide receivers, you know that you just need more receivers on your roster than running backs, because they occupy, you know, more starting requirements. You need more allocation to them. And then from a flex stance, really good flex stances, wide receivers at a certain portion of the draft, which was typically, like I said, the RB2 zone, like starting around like that RB12, RB13 range, they just weren't scoring as many points as the wide receivers. So that's where, you know, we saw that spike in terms of, you know, the zero RB, the anti-fragility, the anchor running back, the wide receiver heavier drafting take like this huge spike. Well, what has happened, though, these last couple of years, though, is that that zone now has started to outscore the wide receiver grouping in that area. We actually have a kind of a new dead zone. It's the wide receiver dead zone, which is, it's kind of oscillated to that position in that same area of the draft. And there are a couple of reasons for that. You know, I've talked to, you know, your co-host, Matt, about this a lot. You know, we've seen with the reduction of, you know, the 11 personnel, the pure slot receiver, teams are moving their alpha wide receiver around at different positions more than ever. We're starting to see like target shares be more condensed. We're starting to see more guys flirt with like the 30% range of target shares and higher. And we would very rarely ever approach that. Like 25% was always like, wow, you got a 25% target share. You're really cooking with the wide receiver one. Now we're starting to see these guys really kind of hone in around that 30%, sometimes even guys pushing higher in terms of like a games played stance, like a JSN last year. But what that has in turn has happened, though, is that the secondary and ancillary wide receivers has been like a lot more of a lull in those guys. They're not scoring as many points as the running backs in this era where the running games and heavier sets have started to take hold. And I'd love to be someone to say like, all right, now running backs are more expensive than ever. I'd love to zig when everyone's zagging. But also, like, when we look at what happened with this NFL draft and where the NFL landscape is right now, I mean, how could you possibly be bullish on that, right? Like, the passing is still down. Wide receiver production is insanely down right now. I mean, when you look at just what happened last year, I mean, 2025, wide receivers had their lowest rate of league-wide targets, league-wide receptions, league-wide yards, league-wide touchdowns over the past 20 years. And like I said, the draft wasn't particularly good for the quarterback position or the running back, or the wide receiver position, definitely even not even the running back position. So it still feels like we're going to be in this defensive kind of meta to stance. So it's like, man, how do we not kind of get caught up into this like wake of like still taking like these running backs with a little more ADP juice than we have in recent years and still emphasizing kind of the wide receiver ones above the secondary tiers. So I still look at it this year and I'm kind of, you know, adjusting it down to where we've been the last couple of years, where it's around like that wide receiver three range, like it's where the running back range is. So I'm like with you, not on a particularly name basis, but like that RB kind of like 27, 28 ish range is where I am looking at drafts and saying like, all right, this is kind of the spot where wide receiver really starts to catch up with the running back group. And then I'm sure we'll throw in a bunch of nuggets, but that's like my long winded answer of where we are right now.
So are what you tell me then here is that you feel like it's kind of like never been more important to hit on the guys like in this range and try to find that like next Javonte Williams, or am I jumping to conclusions there?
Well, you can play it two ways, right? Like if you're going to wait, then yes, it's of utmost importance that you hit with guys in this range. But also, I mean, this is the spot now where I say, when you start to look at these guys, I might already have two or three running backs in my roster right now. And then this is where I'm just badgering wide receiver, right? Like I really think the strength of the wide receiver position, it has more to do with that. Like wide receiver 20 to wide receiver 50, I think is probably the best kind of pocket to be gobbling up wide receivers outside of just, you know, getting your one guy at the top, right? Like those, that top 10-ish range are still really strong.
Yeah, that's what we had talked up last year like crazy. Like round 5 to round 7 was just loaded with guys, and yeah, so many of them went off. I think for me, like in terms of that drop off, yeah, it's where I'm like RB28. I know we didn't want to talk maybe too much about specific names here, but I can still see Ramondre having a big role. I expect more from Travion Henderson, but I could see Ramondre having a big enough role that I would be comfortable having him in that RB2 slot potentially for me. And you know, those guys that I mentioned earlier, like it gets kind of tricky in that range, right? Like they have red flags. There's a ton of upside with some of these names like Price and Tootin, like, but there's also concerns in that area. So I really wouldn't argue with anyone if they wanted to put it in a specific spot here. For me, I would say kind of RB28, and we sort of shift to a different tier into a different area after that.
Yeah, 100%. That's an area. And like I said, you might have names that kind of flip in order, but I think when you put these guys up against the other positions in actual terms of ADP, when you start to get to like these names, you start to see like, all right, I feel a lot stronger about the wide receivers in context versus these guys.
And then that brings us back to Javonte Williams, who last year, it was like insane. He was going like RB 40 at this point in drafts. And that lasted like well into the summer. He was going way outside of the top 100 picks. I know the spots that I actually ended up with him, and I will admit this, it was almost like reluctantly. I don't know about you. Absolutely. I wasn't really interested in getting him, but he would fall to a point, especially in like analyst drafts that we do, right? He would fall to a point, you'd go like, all right, I kind of have to take him now that he's, you know, falling 10th, 11th round sometimes. And it worked out. It was fantastic. He finishes at the RB12 in fantasy points per game among qualified running backs. The one guy that gets bumped out there is Cam Scataboo because he only played a half the season or so there. But over 1,300 scrimmage yards, 13 touchdowns for Javonte. Just an incredible season any way you look at it. And he's only 26 years old. It feels like he's been around forever, Rich, but I think he still has some tread left on the tires here. Is there anything that you think we could take away from, you know, his outlook last year, from how things went down, maybe what we missed to kind of help us identify before we talk about some of these candidates to be the Javonte Williams for 2026? Anything that you think we could take away that could help us with that?
Well, he was a guy I got super lucky on with him and Travis, ETN or HN. Was it official what we're supposed to call him?
We're going more the HN way. Harmon and I have argued about this. I have a bit of a French background, a Canadian in me, so I was sort of pronouncing it that way most of the time. Harmon gives me a hard time about that, but regardless, yeah, we're HN. We'll go with HN.
Yeah, my advice last year was if you were at ADP drafting a Travion Henderson or an RJ Harvey, because remember by the time we got to the end of the summer, Travion sometimes was flirting with like a third round pick, and then Harvey was like in that 4 or 5 range. I was saying, hey, you want to grab a Javonte Williams or a Travis Etienne to pair with one of these guys because you're going to need a bridge to when you hope these guys take over. And it turns out they were just the bridge. we did have moments where both those guys got the start and we got to confidently start them in terms of opportunity. But it turns out, luck boxing into Javonte Williams or Travis, Achane, just based on team structure worked out. But both those guys, I think when you look at like historical hits, they did check a lot of boxes. One, ambiguous backfields. We know that ambiguous backfields have always been relatively hits in terms of, gleaming value from. And then both of those guys ended up playing in offenses that were really just strong. Obviously, the Cowboys, a lot of gamers figured that they had the potential to be like kind of NFC Bengals last year. But, the Jaguars making a huge step up. Because remember, both of these guys really weren't that good of players, especially the back half of the year. I mean, Javonte Williams, the final 9 games, he only had 100 total yards in one game, and it was 101. Travis Etienne, the final back half of the year after their bye, was literally at the bottom of the league in like almost every rushing metric, but he had a full workload and an offense that was producing points, and he wasn't coming off the field. And that's enough, right? And I think last year in general at running back had a number of, these types of players, right? I mean, not even just Javonte and Etienne, but like Christian McCaffrey wasn't that highly of effective a player last year. When you get 400 touches in an offense that's really good and you can catch the ball, right? Chase Brown, another one of these guys, like hasn't really been the most like gleaming efficient back these past years. When you play in an offense and you have a lion's share of the backfield, speaking of a lion's share, it's like Jahmyr Gibbs, I think there's a misconception of like how good of a player he was the back half of last year. But he ended up getting career high usage and targets. He had those big games against the Giants and Commanders because everyone else did. But the Lions offensive line really struggled the back half of the year. And Gibbs as a runner particularly struggled, but he caught a bunch of passes and was in a team scoring points. And like that still matters first, I think, at the running back position. It's probably the one position for fantasy football where we kind of still are operating at the most like talent agnostic. And I mean talent like loose. Like these guys are NFL players, right? Like within context. But like opportunity and your role in an offense, like those things in offensive environment, like they still matter significantly in fantasy football.
The other thing that stood out to me is like there was almost no risk in investing in these backfields. Like, right. I don't know why I didn't factor that in more, because in past years I feel like I had, but especially like looking at that Cowboys backfield, like where Javonte was going, even if you did believe in Jaden Blue or Phil Maffa or whoever else they had there who you thought might have a chance to get some touches, or if you look at the Jags, right, with Tootin there with Bigsby there. Like, none of those guys were going that high. You could have grabbed a couple of them. You could have grabbed even all of them if you really wanted to just lock down those backfields and hope that someone emerged. I'm not saying that's the best approach. Obviously, you know, trying to figure out who's going to be that guy is the best way to go. But I feel like that was the one thing about the Cowboys backfield last year. It was like almost overvaluing the younger guys there and expecting that they were just going to come in. And whether it's because the type of player that Javonte Williams is, whether it's because the injury history, just really not believing that he could come through in the way that he did. I really feel like that for me was where I made that mistake. Overvaluing the competition and not just realizing this is an ambiguous backfield, just grab pieces of it and let's see how it works out.
Yeah, and we're going to have this again with these rookie running backs, you know, not Jeremiah Love to the same degree because the draft capital he received. But when you looked at the guys last year, like we talked about a Travion going in that, getting that elevated capital as the summer went on, or an RJ Harvey, like these are still guys from an archetypical stance that are like 200-pound explosive type runners. And we got kind of spoiled, I think, for some major hits. Obviously, we had the other Achan, you know, Devon Achan hit in that bucket, and then Jahmyr Gibbs. But we forget too, a lot of times these coaches, like this archetype of player, like you still need to be like really good in pass protection. You need to be able to be trusted in short yardage. And both of those players ran into kind of those issues to open up their careers. And they fell behind some guys that really pushed them, like a J.K. Dobbins early in the year before his injury. Like they starkly used those guys in a different manner in the offense. And the same thing with Ramondre and Henderson until late in the year, when just like they just outright trusted Stevenson a lot more in the postseason. So when we look at a guy like Jadarian Price, like he's still in like that bucket of guys, right? Like he's a 200-pound back. We don't really have a huge sample of production from him because he's the fewest touches of any first round running back ever. And you know, he's going to a team that wants to play a lot of football where we're running the ball and they're running in short yardage. And it's like, oh, we have to take a leap of faith in that stance, right? Even though the situation looks really good. So could they end up playing like one of these boring guys over him just because they don't trust him in pass protection or trust him in short yardage? Like those exist in the range of outcomes for these guys. So it's something to always factor into.
All right. So after that conversation, I'm taking away ambiguous backfields, which we know we've talked about for years. Mm-hmm. Strong offenses. We're looking at that. A full workload over talent. I think that is, when it comes to running backs, the correct approach. And trusted in pass protection and in short yardage, and that how that bumps up the value. I think that's the good takeaway from there that we can bring into the rest of the show. But we're going to go to break here. When we return, we're going to talk through the candidates to be this year's Javonte Williams. We'll be right back with that, so stick around. All right, we have finally made it to the heart of the show where we are going to discuss who could be this year's Javonte Williams in fantasy. So welcome to Flip the Script. And again, this doesn't have to be a player that's exactly like Javonte Williams was in 2025. I mean, we say this on every show that you're probably not going to get an identical type player, an identical type outcome, but we're just trying to use this as a vehicle to talk about some of these different backfields and some of these players that we could see emerge this year. So we're looking at a running back going outside the top 24 at the position that we can tell a story about them finishing as a starting caliber fantasy running back, potentially even an RB1 for fantasy. Williams was just an insane version of that going in the 10th round last summer and, you know, coming through the way that he did in that Cowboys offense. There's a couple guys that we've already mentioned that we could talk about here, but I think we should discount, like, you know, Jadarian Price, like Bashaul Tootin. I think we got to take those guys out of the conversation. They're too good. I think they would just be too obvious. So we're going to remove them. They kind of fit in terms of what we're talking about for ADPs, but those guys I have a lot of confidence in this season. And I think a lot of people are going to be drafting them high. So we're going to deem them overqualified for this one. Let's get to the players that we think are in contention, and then we're going to narrow it down to three finalists, Rich, and then we will pick a winner. And we'll start with some backfields here that have serious splits. I mean, I'm looking at the Panthers with Chuba Hubbard and Jonathan Brooks, the Patriots with Ramondre Stevenson, who we already talked about earlier, and Travion Henderson, the Steelers with Jalen Warren and Rico Dowdle, the Broncos and the trio backs they have there now, RJ Harvey, J.K. Dobbins, and Jonah Coleman. And then maybe a little less exciting, the Vikings, right? Aaron Jones, Jordan Mason, possibly DeMond Claiborne factoring in there as well. Let's go back to the top of that list, though, with the Panthers backfield. I think a lot of people right now are hyping up Jonathan Brooks, and it's cool. It is awesome to see him back on a football field doing things after multiple ACL tears. It takes a lot of time. He missed many games, but he is back out there now doing some things and looking pretty good the way he's moving around. I could also make an argument, though, I think, for Chuba Hubbard having value in Carolina. How do you feel about these guys? The younger back who's trying to make this like miraculous return, or the older back who's only 1 year removed from having a very good fantasy season himself back in 2024?
Yeah, I mean, Chuba Hubbard was this guy, right? In 2024.
Yeah.
He was kind of the hit in this range where he was like a lower end pick and then, you know, got that full workload, got that contract extension. So he definitely already checks the box of already having done it. We know that they want to run the football in Carolina. I mean, this is a team that was 29th in pass rate over expectation last year. I'm very curious to see what they do this offseason with Bryce Young, especially if they end up having like a similar situation, because they were just outright hiding him at points last year. But Even though Carolina wanted to run the football a lot last year, I mean, they weren't very good at it, especially the back half of the year. Everyone remembers like that huge spike we got from Rico Dowdle in the middle of the year. But the back half of the year, I mean, the Carolina backfield, they were 30th in success rate, 29th in yards per carry, no explosive runs. They were 29th in explosive run rate over that stance. So the door is open here for if this organization doesn't get a lot out of Chuba Hubbard early on to kind of push him. Now, Hubbard himself was playing through a calf injury. You know, there's definitely an excuse to be made for why his efficiency kind of tailed off, you know, last year. But if he just doesn't hit the ground running, you know, so to speak, you know, no pun intended, like the door is open there to just open up and say, hey, Jonathan Brooks, we used a second round pick on you. And if you remember that year, Jonathan Brooks was coming off of his first ACL, he immediately started to work his way into the rotation when he was back. And then, you know, unfortunately had that setback with the second ACL. And I'm also no doctor, but there was a lot of people that believe like coming back from the second one is actually he's going to be stronger. You know, I'm no doctor, not going to play one here either. But there seems to be a vote of confidence for him actually like it not being as huge of a red flag, right? I guess, so to speak. Or it's like, because like to the layman's, I'm like, oh, two ACLs, like this dude might be cooked, right? And a lot of people are like, no, like he actually could be in a better shape. So like we'll see what happens with that. But I think it's going to be Hubbard early in on a run heavy offense, and then if he just, like I said, it's going to be how he starts the year to how he distances himself. So if the gap is like pretty, I'm saying is the gap could be tight early, and once that happens, then all bets are off for how long he can hold off Jonathan Brooks in terms of turning into a timeshare or to overtaking him. So this one to me, I'm taking both these guys and taking shots on both of them because I know that this team wants to run the football. And like we said, we've seen Hubbard already be good. I think Brooks is capable. But from a confidence stance, like this one is as up in the air to me as the other one, more so than the other ones that you have coming down the pipeline.
Yeah, I agree with you. Going back to the Brooks thing, I think one of the things in his favor, right? The fact that he's just turning 23 in July and he's still so young. He's like the age of some of the rookies coming out. Like that certainly gives him a chance to still get his career back on track here. So that keeps him exciting. I just keep coming back to like Hubbard and that season 2 years ago, right? Huge stats, over 1,300 yards, 11 touchdowns. And last season, I think people are going to look at that and say, okay, he fell off. He's not that great of a back, but I think he was hurt. And I think when Rico Dowdle started playing very well and putting up those monster games, a pair of 200 yard plus games that he had, we talked about this on the show, Harmon and I did. I think Hubbard rushed back. I think he was worried about getting Wally pipped and he rushed himself back because he did not look like the same player. And really last year, I'm kind of writing off to a bit of a lost season. So it would not surprise me at all if Hubbard comes out and holds Brooks off early. We see Brooks get involved, but it would really shock me, I think, if all of a sudden Brooks comes back, takes this job and is a workhorse and the kind of guy that's just going to blow this thing out of the water and blow up for fantasy. Maybe down the stretch, like you said, maybe in the second half of the season, little by little, he chips away at it. But I still think Hubbard has something to say about this job, and I don't think he's going to go away quietly, even though I think a lot of people, fantasy manager-wise, are looking at last season and kind of writing him off a little bit here. Speaking of like the veteran guy with the younger guy in his backfield and a guy, you know, people are kind of waiting for him to move aside, but maybe he will, maybe he won't. Ramondre Stevenson with the Patriots. I said RB 28 in his ADP right now. lots of debate about what Henderson could do this season. Are we going to see that natural progression that we see in most backfields where the younger guy just eventually takes over? Or can Stevenson continue to kind of hold down that, you know, job as the lead back, continue to keep this a committee, which would still make him a value for fantasy? Because I think at RB28, even if he is sharing that backfield with Henderson, I think you make an argument that Stevenson could certainly be in fantasy lineups. Do you think he could be a candidate to be Javonte Williams in 2026?
I mean, from just a ceiling perspective, I mean, he still has to be, I think, the most alluring name of all the guys that we're going to cover in this pocket, right? Because, like, we're talking about, like, a potential outcome of, like, that Gibbsian level, right? That Devon Achane level. Like, this, even as a rookie, and it's funny when you look at, like, when you take a step back from Henderson's rookie season and you're like, there was, like, this level of disappointment from a guy who his first year in the NFL had 1,100 yards and 10 touchdowns, right? Like, it does because he caught that steam and he was a high draft pick. Like, the second he returned that kickoff in that preseason game, we were cooked. Like, it was over. But he still had four touchdown runs of 50 or more yards. That was the most in the NFL. Like, this is an explosive guy. It was the most 50-yard touchdown runs by a rookie since Saquon in 2018. He had multiple games with multiple 50-yard touchdown runs that hadn't been done since Chris Johnson in the CJ2K year. Like, this guy on a per-touch basis still showcased what everyone was excited about coming in. It was the ancillary stuff that bogged him down. And this is why I always, you know, harp on people, like, and we did talk about this a lot with, like, Kenyon Sadiq. Like, Trayvon Henderson, you heard about, like, he was a willing pass protector in college and he was a good pass protector in college. But what happened was, is he's still a 203-pound guy. And when you get in the NFL, 200 pounds is still 200 pounds. And he had a big adjustment period in terms of pass protection. And he was in over his skis early on, picked up some penalties early on, kind of doghoused him a little bit. Because remember, he was sharing work with Antonio Gibson to start the year too, because Gibson was just playing that role better. Particularly remember that Miami Dolphins game too, like, just being so frustrated. Henderson picked up like two holding penalties and, like, got doghoused early in that game. And that just really kind of hurt him. And we saw in the postseason when the chips were on the table and the Patriots started to face real pass rushes for the first time all year, it was all Ramondre Stevenson. I mean, Ramondre played 71% of postseason snaps. He out-touched Henderson 70-35 and really conceded a handful of snaps because he got, like, his eye poked in the Houston game and missed, like, a whole quarter of that game. But he was just more trusted in those situations. So now you say, all right, Trayvon Henderson, you had a year under your belt. We're looking for you to come back and work on these areas. And does he make that jump, right? Because I think if he does make that jump and he's more trustworthy in those situations, it's going to be hard to keep him out of the field, right? Like, we've seen this story before. We just lived it with Gibbs and Montgomery, right? Like, David Montgomery's an excellent football player, and he was an excellent football player last year as well. But when teams just realize, like, they have this guy in the bottle and, like, you can just uncork it and it's all coming together, it's hard to keep that player off the football field. So a lot's going to come down to Henderson and the growth he has, I think, in the passing game and, you know, protecting Drake May. Also, the Patriots quietly, like, made some really nice moves on the offensive line this year. You know, granted, there's a step of faith. You know, can Elijah Vera Tucker, you know, stay healthy? But they've got, like, a real versatile group of guys that can now move around positions. So if they run into the same situation where, like, Will Campbell is struggling, obviously Jared Wilson's moving back to center this year now with the addition of Vera Tucker. But they've got a lot of guys that can move around multiple positions. We've seen in Wenyu's played, like, everywhere to this point in his career too. So add AJ Brown. Like, this still feels like an offense one you want to invest in because we believe they're going to be good, and, like, a player that still has, like, an immense ceiling. So I get it. You look at the postseason and you're like, all right, I'm going to have pump the brakes, maybe even still take Ramondre still in some spots where he falls. But this is still a player that, from a ceiling outcome, like, I'm scared of other gamers in my league still ending up with Trayvon Henderson.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a couple of things with that too. Like, if he had come out last year when he got the opportunities, when Stevenson was sidelined and fallen on his face, just been kind of mediocre, he didn't. Right. He had some really big games, right? He produced for fantasy. He was coming through. So that gives you hope for the future. The other thing I keep coming back to when it comes to the playoffs is they were facing some of, like, the toughest run defenses. And it wasn't like Stevenson was putting up good stats. He was just getting those touches because, like you said, they didn't want to make mistakes, but he wasn't putting up good numbers. They weren't having success on the ground. So I also feel like that, like, they were trying to make that push. They were just trying to eke out those wins. Their defense was playing so strong that they went with the more veteran guy. That's not necessarily, in my mind, something that's going to be super indicative of the future. I think they are still going to make that transition to Henderson. So Stevenson in the conversation here, but him holding off Henderson for the bulk of the season, that would also surprise me. But we'll put a pin in that one. The Panthers one is certainly interesting. Stevenson could be in the running here. What about the Steelers' backfield? We talked about Rico Dowdle and those huge games that he had for the Panthers. Now he's in Pittsburgh. Jalen Warren's had a bunch of chances here to take over this job, to be that like lead guy, that workhorse guy. He's not that player. They continue to have him in some sort of tandem. Last year, of course, it was with Kenny Gainwell, who had a great season there. Now Dowdle's around. Dowdle has the history with Mike McCarthy, who's the coach there now. Are any of these backs in Pittsburgh catching your eye as a possible Javonte type player this year?
I mean, there's potential here for, you know, probably if there it's, I think it's more tied to contingency. If I think this group is more tied to contingency than possibly the others. Cause like I said, I think we can just see Henderson. If he's that good, he's going to play more. And then the same thing, you know, with Chuba Hubbard and John Brooks, like they're going to play. That's if it opens the hot hand. This one, I still see like kind of being compartmentalized, like largely most of the season, right? And this is the worst kind of compartmentalization because I think that they view these guys largely interchangeably, which we don't like, right? Like it's different when guys have set roles and you can still kind of play like the game of like trying to predict how the game script goes. I think when you look at Jalen Warren, Rico Dowdle, the Steelers probably think that these guys could just be used in all capacities, right? Like, and that's where it gets tough. And when guys are in the same roles and it's like, all right, then it's like a true hot hand situation. Right? The Panthers, the end of last year, remember? Like we couldn't play any Panthers backs at the end of last year because they just viewed those guys kind of like, all right, we'll play the hot hand. No one had it. But Jalen Warren is a guy I still think is too good. Like his resume is still too good to, I think, just get ISO just because Rico Dowdle has some ties to Mike McCarthy. We don't have any full sample of Rico Dowdle still giving us a wire-to-wire, like, good fantasy season. He's had pockets the past 2 years where he's looked good, but never wire-to-wire been, like, a guy that's been, like, locked down like a backfield. And you could say the same thing, I guess, supposedly for Jalen Warren, but Jalen Warren still has, like, this lengthy history since the NFL where he's, like, top 10 in almost, like, every rushing metric. He's taken on more work every year of his career. This one, to me, I haven't really been drafting either of these guys because they just fall in like a pocket where much more strongly about the wide receivers in this area. The Steelers also have, you know, no more Arthur Smith. So how much is the backfield going to get? Like, we always knew what we can count on with Arthur Smith when it comes to the backfield. They had pass catcher and Michael Pittman. So this is just one. I haven't really been drafting either of these guys. I'll let you try to push a big sale on one of them for me.
I think if I'm taking one of them, it's Dowdle. He's the one that I've ended up with more shares of. And it's just, you know, there aren't many running backs that have posted over 1,300 scrimmage yards each of the past two seasons. And shockingly, somehow he's one of them. I know the way that it's happened hasn't necessarily been the most natural. And, you know, over the course of the full season, he's done it consistently. Last year, of course, those huge games did a lot of the heavy lifting. But we've seen him produce. We've seen him produce it in a big way for fantasy. And we've seen him kind of weirdly emerge now from two backfields where we weren't sure where he was going to fit in. And he's done it two straight seasons where he's become that guy and proven himself with the Cowboys. And then last year, of course, overtook Hubbard. There was an injury involved there, but he ended up having those big meaningful games at that point in the season. So if I'm drafting one of them, it's Dowdle. I agree with you. I don't necessarily think we're going to see a monster season from either of them. So that kind of makes it unfortunate. We're talking about a guy that could have that RB1 campaign. It's probably going to take an injury here, and could take an injury could really make anybody that we're talking about today move up into, you know, the top 12, top 15. If there's enough injuries around him clearing the space, as we said earlier, when it comes to workload for running back. So we'll leave it at that for the Steelers for now. We'll go to the Broncos.
Any hope for Caleb Johnson? Do you have any hope for Caleb Johnson?
No, zero hope for Caleb. He's got to go to a different team. We need him to change teams. It is over for him in Pittsburgh. And we might see
that
happen.
That was for the three people that wanted to know. We had to throw him out there for the three people that are holding out.
I have one dynasty share, and every time I look at it, I just get a little bit sad inside. But yeah, I can't trade him, and the Steelers probably can't trade him. Maybe we'll see him get released at some point and end up somewhere else and get another chance to get his career going. For this Broncos running back room, this is one we're going to talk about three guys here in Harvey and Dobbins and now Coleman in the mix. What are your thoughts there? I think this is a good offense. It qualifies there. is it ambiguous? We're going to have a bunch of guys involved. They're even saying that Coleman might have a role early in the season, that he's not just necessarily that Dobbins injury replacement. What are you expecting here from this backfield? Do you really think that one of these guys might just emerge out of this three-man committee?
No, because it's Sean Payton's history. Like, we have a whole Sean Payton history to lean on here too, as well. It's a bummer because I definitely think there's a place in the multiverse where J.K. Dobbins' career is just thriving, right? Like, there's evidence, because the thing about everything this guy's been through, and like, he still has been productive, like, especially even these past 2 years, it's just, we cannot count on him to stay on the football field at this point. I mean, he missed the final seven games last year. He's been hurt every year of his career. He's missed four more games every year of his career. So it's just, it's tough to count on. You're granted, you're injury prone, you're not, but they are also, I think, going to factor in that into his utilization, which we saw last year. Denver ran the ball 56% of the time on J.K. Dobbins' snaps. Like, he was not involved in the pass game at all. He had 37 receiving yards. Like, so we're not going to get that type of run out. So you still need that to kind of smash, or the inverse is like, he's the guy that scores, what, 12 to 14 touchdowns. Like, that's the other outcome of that you have from a fantasy football stance. We also did get like this news this week that RJ Harvey tore his labrum in that playoff game against the Patriots and had offseason surgery. It doesn't seem like it's going to, like, something that's going to be hugely pressing, but if, you know, he just lets Jonah Coleman get on the field, you know, in terms of training camp, right, and just try to make a name for himself, like, that's still just an opening of the door, another one that wasn't available. Because when RJ Harvey, you know, took the field last year out of necessity to the degree that they had to elevate his role after the J.K. Dobbins injury, I mean, he flatlined. I mean, he was one of the most inefficient backs in the NFL behind an offensive line that is one of the best in the NFL. I mean, yeah. There were 49 running backs that had 100 more carries last year. RJ Harvey, 42nd in yards per carry, 41st in success rate, 47th in explosive run rate, which we thought coming out of UCF. Also, big red flag, always Gus Malzahn running backs. 39th in, you know, rate of runs that gained no yardage, 42nd in yards after contact. So it wasn't even like one of these things, like, he was punished by his offensive line, was creating on his own. So Jonah Coleman is one of these players that's a complete wild card, because Jonah Coleman doesn't have a lot of like super spades. But you know what he does? He does a lot of things that just coaches like at a baseline level to good level. He kind of has that in his toolkit where he's just like, hey, I'm going to have a high success rate. I'm going to get not strikeout runs. I might not run for 40 a pop, but I'm going to get you a lot of fours and fives when they should be twos and threes. And I'll get you sevens and eights when they should be fours and fives. He's really good in pass protection. Granted, like I said, grain of salt always from a prospect coming into the NFL, but he's willing. He talks about the emphasis on why he thinks that's important in his game. He doesn't fumble and he can catch the football. So he's a wild card because he has, I think, more of a complete package in terms of utilization to how he can be used in the offense. It's just what doors open for him in year one. He could be a guy that's just caught in like the wake of, hey, they're going to run this back where Harvey is the passing down back and Dobbins is the early down back. And maybe we see a little bit of Coleman in for a couple of snaps per game. Or one of the doors gets open from one of these guys just not playing that strongly, and Coleman can step into the other guy's role and start carving into that. So he is a guy that's particularly interesting because I just think from a three down perspective, he offers the most of the three guys, where the other two guys, I think, are best in the roles they were in last year.
Yeah, I find myself investing in this backfield, and it's Coleman who's the one that I'm taking. And it's because he's going so late, and it's because of everything you just said there. I think he was brought in to kind of be that Dobbins replacement. I don't think the Broncos are foolish about the fact that Dobbins gets hurt every single season and they need to have another plan. And Harvey's almost like the opposite of what we talked about with Travion Henderson, right? Where Henderson got his opportunity and really flashed and was making some big plays and was scoring touchdowns. Harvey was getting by, he was having some okay fantasy games, but he wasn't looking like a guy who was destined to be a strong starter for this offense for many seasons, and then you bake in the injury and all that sort of stuff. I also think with Harvey and Coleman, like, they're younger. Away, right? Yeah, no, exactly. And I think those guys are a little bit younger, and I'm kind of adding an extra element here, the Javonte Williams thing, but they're younger. I think there's still a little bit of intrigue around them, a little bit of excitement, whereas I keep coming back with this backfield. If we want to find like a J.K. Dobbins type, him coming through to be that next Javonte Williams, if he stays healthy, does that qualifies, doesn't it? If J.K. Dobbins finally stays healthy, that shocks us all. He comes through because he's been really good. He's been good for fantasy, like you said. He is a good back. The durability concerns are the thing. That would be maybe the funniest outcome. It would be awesome to see. I'm rooting for that to happen. I don't think necessarily it's the most likely outcome. But J.K. Dobbins staying healthy, coming through with a full fantasy season, he probably would finish like top 12, top 15, have a great year. And that would be the story. And that would be the shocking one. So we'll keep that in mind as well when we're trying to decide
Just to close on there, I do think that this all three of these guys are guys that you should take relative shots on, because when we talked about like the Javonte and the Travis Etienne like outcomes, like we believe that Denver is going to score points. So like I just went through this whole spiel where I was like, hey, you know, hey, look at these efficiency metrics for RJ Harvey. They're ugly, right? But what if they aren't in year two, right? Like what if they aren't? So I do think that when you look at this backfield in totality, like it should be one that, from a top-down stance, just from a team environment stance that we talked about so far, like you should be excited to still at least take bites at the apple here, even if they fail, because this is a team we do believe is going to be productive, great defense, can score points. So I'm kind of like saying, take some shots at all of them.
Yeah, I've told people to take shots on J.K. Dobbins even the last couple of years, but the Dobbins thing for me is you take shots on him, you have him on your team for the first month or so, and then you trade him away before that injury happens. And I don't really like playing that way, but that's the way to do it. If you're going to take J.K. Dobbins, don't trick yourself into thinking it's going to continue for 17 weeks, because the likelihood of that happening is very slim. Speaking of durability concerns, we could jump to the Vikings here. Aaron Jones, he's coming back. It looked like he wasn't going to be back with the Vikings. They bring him back. I mean, he's turning 32 in December. It's been like six straight seasons of different injuries he's dealt with, lots of soft tissue stuff. And to his credit, like he often plays through it, Rich. Like he often stays out there, still produces in some way, but he's getting older now. Do you see a path towards him having kind of a miraculous season where he stays healthy and still gets it done at his age? Could an injury to him potentially open the door for Jordan Mason, or even like the complete long shot, who I don't think's in the running to be a Javonte Williams type, but Damon Claiborne, the rookie, could potentially be that Aaron Jones replacement if he does miss time?
Yeah, the toughest part is, like you said, just trying to bank on this, because he's with the same team that tried to extend his role each of the last 2 years as he's gotten 30 and 31, and he's picked up injuries as they put more on his plate, right? Like Aaron Jones was always kind of one of these guys that you'd always wanted to keep in like that 240 to like 300 touch range. And the Vikings have had different pockets of each season where they've tried to extend his workload, and he's gotten nicked up at his age. So that, I think that's where you look at like the addition of a Claiborne, and they look at what Claiborne can do coming into the NFL. And this is a guy that has a lot of work to do outside of just running the football. And they are like, hey, we can bring him in and just let him as a rookie have like a couple touches per game where we're just handing off to him. He doesn't have to do anything else yet. And I think that's where they look at terms of like alleviating Aaron Jones. I will say, if there's one of these guys though that were to pop for fantasy football, you would still want to bet on the archetype of Aaron Jones, right? Like he's still playing the passing down stuff. He still also plays a little more at the goal line than people think. It's not just like Mason comes in every time inside the five, whereas like we talk about Harvey and Dobbins. In year one, Harvey never got inside the five unless it was a passing play. Aaron Jones still, they're kind of interchanging those guys at the goal line. So I would still say like, yeah, Aaron Jones, it's just a tough bet. Like you said, the age and injuries and hit, like I said, this organization understanding, like you would think internally, like, hey, this guy's gotten banged up because we're kind of putting a lot on his plate. Mason is just like a best ball only guy for me. Like he's kind of a touchdown or bust profile. He's been really solid the past 2 years with the Vikings and 49ers when there's been no one else available. Like when he has to get touches, he's been fine. But I mean, he's a zero burger in the passing game. And even in those spots, he's a highly efficient guy in terms of yards per touch. But you got to score touchdowns with him to score fantasy points. Like the weeks that he does not score a touchdown, he gives you unusable fantasy lines. And that's what makes it tough. So best ball, these drafts that are going on now, I'm all for Jordan Mason because you can soak up the weeks he has him. But I think he's largely completely like touchdown or bust contingency value guy.
It's not an exciting pick, and I don't think he would go on to do it over the course of a full season. But Mason, to me, like you said, when he's had the opportunity by himself, and would he get it by himself even if Jones was out this year because of Claiborne? Maybe not. But last year, when Jones was out of the lineup over the early part of the season from week 3 to week 7, Mason was the RB 16 in fantasy points per game. When Jones sat out week 18, Mason had his second highest yardage total of the season, 94 yards on 14 carries. He can get it done. It's not necessarily the profile that we'd be looking for a guy to completely smash in fantasy. But this Vikings offense, I do think, is going to be better this year. The offensive line, I think, is going to have some better injury luck. I think Kyler Murray being there is going to help the situation. So all things considered, there's intrigue. There's interest for me, let's say, in that Vikings backfield. I don't know that it would be Aaron Jones, though, because I'm so scared off by the injuries. Mason a little bit. Claiborne the long shot. But realistically, it's probably not coming from the Vikings if we're looking for the next Javonte Williams. A really intriguing group there. I mean, we'll hold the finalists. We'll look at these guys when we get to the end of the full list. But I think we got a few now already in contention that we're going to have to talk about. Some very, very cool names to go over. We're going to take a brief pause here, though. That does it for us on the Yahoo Sports Network. We will continue the conversation and the search for the next Javonte Williams in fantasy after this final break. All right, welcome back. A handful of names to still go over here. Some more candidates to figure out who the next Javonte Williams could be in 2026. Some deserve a little more time. Some I think we could probably go through pretty quickly, Rich. But the first pairing, two running backs who are on the rise, who have great contingency value. I think they would need their starter to go down. I don't know if they can win their backfields on their own. You might feel differently, but we have seen these guys produce when they've been given the chance. That's Kyle Manungai on the Bears at RB 33 in ADP. Blake Corum on the Rams, who's right behind him at RB 35. Pretty highly coveted fantasy assets. Do you see these guys being potential finalists in our conversation today, Rich?
I mean, absolutely, if we get the runway, right? Like, we already see the contingency value from one game of Manungai. Obviously, the one game of Swiftness. I know it was against the Bengals, but it was 200 yards. it wasn't like he just played the Bengals.
I bring it up all the time, and Harmon just rolls his eyes. So, yeah, we'll bring it up again.
Man,
why not?
I get it. But 200, he had 198 yards into the Bengals. So, like, transitive property, that's like 98 yards against someone else. So, it still is a really effective game. And also, he had the most touches for a seventh round rookie since 2019. And we had another seventh round rookie from last year coming up, I saw on the show sheet. So, and it's partly just me. It's like, just I believe in Ben Johnson, man. Like, they didn't bring anyone in to really kind of threaten this backfield. I believe in this offense taking another step forward in year two under Ben Johnson. I believe in the run game. People think about the Bears and how exciting it was, like Caleb Williams and Luther Burden, but people forget the back half of the year. What were the Bears? They were a run team. So they want to run the football. It's in Ben Johnson's DNA to set up the play action pass. So I do like Manungai. He is a little bit more in like that Jordan Mason bucket, like we talked about. He's not a complete zero in the receiving game, but he does need DeAndre Swift, I think, out of the way to like have that unlocked for him. So again, probably one of these guys, while we still have Swift healthy, is a better and a best ball type, but the contingency upside is extremely high. I would say even higher for a Manungai than a couple of other contingency guys maybe we talked about at this point.
Yeah, I really like Manungai, and like I said, I bring up that game all the time for him. How could you not? Again, it's going back to when you get that opportunity, what do you do with it, right? And he showed that in the perfect scenario, and that's what it was, he can come through and give you that monster game. That's what you should do when you get that chance, right?
Yes.
I don't believe that he is going to overtake Swift. And I really actually think that Swift is a great pick this year. I think Swift's somebody that people are kind of overlooking. But last year, even when Manungai came on, even when he started to produce, it was like from week 6 on, Swift's numbers actually went up from that point on. He was the RB10 from that point on in fantasy points per game. So these guys are both going to be productive. I definitely want Manungai because you can throw him in your lineup as that RB3 flex type, and he'll have some games where he comes through with some bigger stats. And yes, the chance for him to be RB1 is there. It's going to require the injury, though. And I kind of feel the same about Corum. Everybody wants to talk about Kyren Williams, and they're kind of like waiting for Kyren Williams to just lose that job. And it's not happening. He keeps delivering. He keeps coming through. Yes, this might become more and more of like a 50-50 committee, but I don't think the Corum is just going to outright push Kyren aside.
No, and it's because of the ancillary stuff that we keep harping on. It's when the chips are on the table for the Rams last year, which just wasn't very often. But what if that steps back, right? I know that the Rams are the favorites to the Super Bowl. I know they're loaded up, but just what if they don't lead for as many snaps as they led as next year? Like, football is very fluid. Things happen in season because that's where Corum didn't play. Like, in positive game scripts, they interchange these guys, but when the Rams had to throw or whenever they were trailing, guess who was in the backfield? It was Kyren Williams. They ran the ball 48% of the time on Blake Corum snaps. It was 38.7% with Kyren Williams. Corum ran a pass route on only 18.5% of the dropbacks, 56% for Kyren Williams. And when the Rams were tied or trailing, Kyren Williams played 75% of the snaps and only 24% for Corum. So, I mean, if they regress in any type of fashion, I still expect them to be, you know, Kyren Williams to be the guy they trust in those situations the most. And I like Corum. I think that there's standalone value for him more so than maybe some of the other guys we talked about. But the problem is like this type of guy has never been good when you have to pay cost for it in fantasy football. Ben Tate never had this guy, when you have to draft him as like a starter and like he's RB35, I get it. Like it's right on the fringe and some of that contingency upside is Price thinks it's the Rams. But like this type of guy has never really panned out and like been a hit for fantasy football.
All right. So we're going to move on then from those two guys. We're going to talk about that other seventh round pick that you mentioned. He's part of the next group here. Jacory Kroski-Merritt or Bill. I don't know which one we're going with here, Rich. I end up going with JCM just because it's the quickest in my mind. It's easy to say. He's got a shot here to be the Commanders' lead back, in my opinion. Like, this is one of those ambiguous backfields. I don't think Rashad White is the kind of guy that profiles as like a true lead back. I think we've seen him get the opportunity when there's been injuries in his backfields, and he can do it for like a short stretch. But as it goes longer, as he's asked to kind of do more over time, they work other guys in it. We saw that last year with the Bucs where Bucky Irving was out. Rashad White was a starter. He had some good games. But then as Bucky missed more time, now Sean Tucker started to get worked in more, and they didn't just want Rashad White taking everything. I think that could be what we see from him in Washington, right? That White's going to get an opportunity here, but I just don't think he's that back. I think JCM, what we saw from him last year was interesting. I thought it was exciting. I know Catron Allen's there to try to be the Chris Rodriguez replacement. How do you feel about JCM?
This is another backfield where I'm largely just taking all three guys and hopefully I can get something to stick at some point, especially these guys are all relatively cheaper too. When we talk about with like the Broncos guys, right? Like these guys, Catron's obviously at the bottom. But even I'm mixing him in a little bit too. White is a guy, like you said, I mean, the past 2 years, he's conceded touches to lower end draft capital running backs in Bucky Irving and then Sean Tucker last year. Because remember, he had the keys initially when Bucky Irving had that initial injury and was such an ineffective rusher again that it opened the door back up for like, hey, Sean Tucker is going to start to get more work. And then there was a point actually where Sean Tucker was like completely overtaking him, right? But we know what we're going to get out of White from a floor perspective is that he's really good in the pass game. You know, 40 catches in each last 4 years. He's really good in pass pro. That's going to get him on the field over a day three rookie and then a day three year two player who struggled in that capacity last year. I mean, JCM, you know, we only ran a route on 24% of the dropbacks. He only had 39 snaps in pass protection. He allowed a pressure rate on 15% of those. Like, it was an adjustment period for him too. But we did also see JCM, you know, you brought up the playoffs with like Jordan Mason sneaking in. Well, we saw Chris Rodriguez miss those two games at the end of the year, and we saw, you know, JCM deliver for fantasy gamers in that capacity. And this is a seventh round rookie that hit in year one. We should actually believe in the good, right? Like, we shouldn't tear down the bad things from Jacory Kroski-Merritt necessarily, because the fact that we got anything out of him is like actually really strong. It should be an indicator to at least take some bites at the apple on him. Again, like we talked about Travion to a lesser degree, because we know Travion's going to get runway because of the draft capital that was invested in him. Like, JCM has to make a year or two improvement in those struggle areas, particularly protecting the football too. This is a guy that fumbled four times. Like, you lose snaps to a Chris Rodriguez type when you're getting those strikeouts, right? Like that, when you're getting the negative plays. Because a coach like is going to start to play like Kareem Hunt, right? Like, that's how Kareem Hunt gets touches because he's just, you know, falling forward. He's not striking out. And I should bring that up because Catron Allen is that type of guy. Like, Catron Allen as a runner, this is a guy who already relegated a type of player like a Rashad White in college and Nicholas Singleton. Nicholas Singleton is a very Rashad White-esque adjacent player in terms of how he plays. Great things about True. Nicholas Singleton. He's big, fast, and can catch. Negatives. Might be blind. Can't hang on to the football. So Catron Allen is one of these guys, though. It's not like overwhelmingly like gonna wow you in terms of splash plays, but he's a guy I believe like NFL coaches are gonna like. He's in that Tyler Allgeier, David Montgomery zone of like, hey, this guy gets me positive plays, like, and like that's the type of stuff like coaches will start to extend workloads on. So I even have been nibbling even a little bit on Catron and some of these teams that are a little thinner on running back depth and that just need to throw something against the wall, because it's wide open here. It's a new regime, in terms of offensive coordinator. I mean, David Blau is with the team, but we know if Blau is going to take anything he learned at his previous stops under Dan Campbell, working with Ben Johnson, he's already talked about it. They're going to play more under center this year. And if they're going to run the football, it could be a guy like Catron Allen that sneaks out. So I'm largely throwing all three of these guys at the wall at random points, you know, at intersections of the draft when they're kind of on the board. And just kind of hopefully something sticks, because this is an offense I think can be significantly improved. They were in the NFC Championship game just 2 years ago. They were snake bit by just a zillion injuries last year and year two of Cliff Kingsbury, who always seems to get figured out because he has no creative gene and adjustment, you know, bone in his body. So I'm excited to kind of invest up cheaply into the Commanders in general, because I just think they're an offense that's undervalued outside of Jaden Daniels.
This one really fits the bill in my mind. Like, we're talking about all the way the Jags were last year, the way the Cowboys were. Not necessarily that I think the Commanders offense is going to be quite as good, but having Jaden Daniels gives you a chance to be extremely productive, like we saw 2 years ago. And these are three backs that are all going outside of the top 100 picks. So like we're saying, you want to take a bite at two of them. You want to take all three late in your draft and try to lock down the Commanders backfield and hope someone comes through. It could happen. And then it's pick your poison. I personally think that, you know, JCM has the chance to do it. I think he'll get first shot. I think the way that they've talked, like, they've already identified, we've heard the reports, right, that he's got to get better in the passing game. If he wants to become that guy, he needs to show that he can, you know, produce and pass pro, that he can actually get better in those areas. But if you look back to last year, you touched on it, like what he did late in the season. Throughout the whole year, Chris Rodriguez only topped 70 scrimmage yards twice, and we know he doesn't give you that much in terms of the passing game, but only 70 scrimmage yards twice, never went over 85 yards in a single game. Meanwhile, when JCM, he goes over 70 scrimmage yards four times, including twice in the final month. That's what you were referencing there, and everyone's going to remember, you know, what he did, RB10 in fantasy points per game during the fantasy playoffs, topped 95 yards in two of those games, scored four touchdowns during that stretch. So, again, another guy who got the opportunity, showed he can do something with it. I hope they give him another chance this year. And I hope this doesn't just become a frustrating situation like it was for most of last season, where we're just going to plug Allen into that C-Rod role. And now we're just going to roll with three guys like this, and three guys where the Jerry McNichols spot becomes even worse for fantasy, because now you have Rashad White there. So it's going to be even more of a split between those three. I think that would be concerning in my mind, but I think this is certainly a backfield that people should be going after. And I think I think people should. And if they've been listening to the show, I think they already know that. Woody Marks was in this section as well here. I don't think there's much to say about Woody Marks. I mean, he got an opportunity last year. He's one of these guys that didn't really get it done with his opportunity. Now you put David Montgomery there, who I think is going to be the workhorse in that backfield. And even if Montgomery gets hurt and misses time, I don't have a lot of faith that Woody Marks is going to be able to step in and do that much where he's going to become a fantasy star. And a lot of that is just because I'm looking at him last year going, why didn't he do it last year? If he didn't do it last year, the odds in my mind of him coming through and doing it all of a sudden this season are pretty slim.
Yeah, I mean, the best thing you can say is just from like an objective stance, like he fits some criteria of things that, you know, hit, you know, if you're looking at guys that are taken as their RB2 or later, the guys that hit and like beat ADP or produce top 24 seasons are typically 1 to 2 year players attached to a running back that's not being taken as an RB1. So like he kind of checks those boxes as like a blind dart, but that's really it. Like nothing in terms of what he had in on his table in terms of opportunity last year was particularly alluring. And that's why they went out and immediately, you know, traded for David Montgomery, who really fits their scheme really well. I mean, This is a team that wants to run a lot of man gap runs. David Montgomery, we talked about, like, he was still really good last year. I mean, he led the NFL in success rate and man gap runs last year. Woody Marks really struggled in that capacity. He's a smaller back too, but there's a reason why they went out and got David Montgomery. He fits what they want to do in terms of scheme and as a runner.
And Montgomery doesn't fit the cutoff that we're using for today's show, but Montgomery wouldn't shock me if Montgomery finished the year as a low-end RB1, if he's the guy that kind of gets up there. But people have recognized that, and the ADP is kind of already adjusted into a higher range there. A few more contenders that I want to mention here, and we don't need to talk through all of them. You can just kind of pick who you want to discuss here. To dub this one, the new team, new role, new hope group. So Kenny Gainwell with the Bucks at RB36, Rashad White, who we just discussed, at RB38, Chris Rodriguez, who we just discussed, though he's with a new team in Jacksonville, RB42, Isaiah Pacheco on the Lions at RB45, Keaton Mitchell on the Chargers at RB46, and then Tyler Allgeier in that really crowded Cardinals backfield. Crowded for now, maybe they'll clear some guys out, but at the moment, they got a lot of backs in that backfield behind who we think is going to be a true star in Jeremiah Love, and Allgeier's going at RB47. I know there's one guy that stands out here to me. Anybody that you want to highlight from this group, Rich?
Typically, if you're going to throw darts at some of these guys, you want at least the guy to have a pass catching background. So that's where Gainwell kind of stands out, you know, him. And people forget, like, Gainwell coming out of Memphis was a guy that had like a pretty solid rushing profile too. He just never got a chance to really run the ball. So he's interesting to me. And the Bucks offensive line is in just such a way better spot than where we left off last year. I mean, they were just so beaten up last year. I mean, Tristan Wirfs only played 12 games. Luke Goedeke only played 11. Cody Mock missed the whole season after week two. Ben Bradison only played 11 games. Like, getting these guys back and healthy, I think, is important. Gives him a little bit of juice. And we've kind of seen, like, the offseason not really run out pure for Bucky Irving in terms of, is he over the shoulder injury yet? You know, where is he in terms of headspace? Who do you got? I won't just keep going down the list. Like, who's the guy you got?
No, Gainwell was the guy. Gainwell's the guy in my mind, and it's for exactly what you just said, that you're going to get value out of him. He's a player that you could potentially get into your lineup, even in the role that he has to start the season.
Right, exactly.
And then if Bucky Irving suffers injuries, but even if Bucky Irving doesn't, I think Gainwell could do more with the Rashad White role than what Rashad White did there last year. And I think we could see Gainwell have another very strong season. I love the fact that you brought up the injuries to the offensive line for the Bucks, because I feel like we keep going back to the Chargers offensive line injuries and how much that affected their offense. The Bucks got like wiped out last year. It was injuries to the receiving core. Baker Mayfield was hurt, and that offensive line was a revolving door throughout the year. So I think that's an important thing to bring up. We could see a much better version of that Bucks offense this year. And I think Gainwell could be a very strong fantasy asset, to the point where I would almost want to include him in the finalist conversation. Anybody else that you want to touch on there? I know Keaton Mitchell, he'd be like, if there's an injury for the Chargers, if Hampton goes down, Keaton Mitchell with the speed and a Mike McDaniel offense. Like,
yeah,
it's interesting, but I don't think, yeah, he's not like a workhorse type, but he could end up having some really spectacular games.
It feels like even if something were to happen to Amarian Hampton, like, wouldn't this be the classic example where, like, Keaton Mitchell's role just doesn't change? Like, he's the guy getting 8 to 12 ancillary touches a game in the Mike McDaniel offense. But if something happened to Hampton, like, they would just keep Mitchell in that role, and like Vidal would still like just, because Vidal is like, you know, he was productive also with the opportunity he got last year. I don't want to just completely discount him in terms of being able to come in and handle some workload as well.
I think I've thrown a lot of cold water on the Chris Rodriguez thing. I know some people are kind of looking at, could it be Tootin? Could it be Rodriguez? Like I mentioned before, Rodriguez just doesn't have the big stats. He's kind of a touchdown or bust guy. And you put him in this backfield with Tootin. Do I think he's going to have a role, assuming that he's healthy? Because obviously he's missing time right now, and we'll have to monitor the health thing there. But he's also missing valuable reps with his new team. We're hearing about how good Tootin looks. Like, all of these things now are just adding to the fact that I don't think Rodriguez is a strong fantasy asset. He's somebody that you plug and play, bye week fill in. You hope he gets a touchdown that week. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he's somebody that's going to come through and have a top 15, top 20 fantasy season.
I'm actually just like so bewildered by like what's going on in Jacksonville this offseason, because it seems like they are like, we're like gearing up to try to like run the football more, and there's no reason they should be doing that, because their best personnel is obviously 11 personnel with the three wide receivers that they got, and potentially four if no matter what they're going to do with Travis Hunter, Brenton Strange. The offensive line's not good. And they didn't run the ball well the back half of last year with a guy that was already like had more of a proven pedigree, you know, in Travis Etienne. So it's like they're kind of built to throw the ball and lean into the success they had last year. It feels like every move they've made this offseason is to kind of get away from that. And it scares the life out of me. Like, I'm like, come on, man, what are we doing over here? You know, all these quotes are about like just wanting to play more multiple tight end sets. And I'm like, no, you should be doing what you did last year. When you went into Denver and you just threw the ball around all over the Denver Broncos, like that's how the offense should run. We found the homes for everyone, right? Parker Washington in the slot hybrid role, Jacoby Byers in the Z, you know, Brian Thomas coming back healthy, playing in the X, you know, Trevor Lawrence playing the best football of his career. Like, let's not break the wheel. Like, we found it.
Maybe they're just trying to fool us. Maybe this is what they're putting out there, and they're going to show up week one and just chuck the ball all over the yard.
Because it's one of those, like, I know what they should do, but they keep telling me different things, and I'm like, I don't like this. I'm like, what's happening over here?
I mean, I'm a Liam Cohen believer now. I'm going to continue to ride with him here until I see otherwise. So, yeah, I'm hoping that they can come through, and I definitely am still grabbing a bunch of shares of Tootin, obviously, based on what I just said.
Let me ask you about one guy about Chris that Richard. We didn't talk about. I know we're in shot clock. I'm just... But we didn't talk about him, but one guy that's just kind of been like a steady Eddie, and I feel like no one like wants to draft, is Tony Pollard. Just consistently, like 5 years in a row, over 1,000 yards, three in a row, like he just completely flirts that 1,300-yard range. He was really good the back quarter of last year, and against some good defenses, like he torched the Browns one game, 300-yard rushing games. I don't believe that in 2026, like Nicholas Singleton's going to have like a huge impact. And this is a team that has a young quarterback. They get Brian Daboll, and I know people roll their eyes, but Brian Daboll has been attached to a lot of young quarterback production. Jackson Dart last year, one of the better Daniel Jones seasons, obviously Josh Allen. Man, like Tony Pollard feels like one of these guys that like no one wants to draft, but it's like just kind of is going to provide.
And the environment's just getting so much better there, right? And everyone's talking about, including myself, everyone's talking about, I mean, I just wrote an article about sleeper quarterbacks. I talked about Cam Ward and the chance that he could have a much better year in his second season. And then you look at the receivers and what they've done there with Carnell Tate coming in and being potentially a legit number one. Wandale Robinson, a huge upgrade there as the number two. Gunnar Helms getting talked up at tight end, right? And yet it's maybe because he's kind of more boring veteran, it feels like. Tony Pollard not getting as much of that love, or just the expectation that we're going to see some sort of committee, whether it's Tajay Spears or whether Singleton does get sprinkled in a little more as he shows that he's fully healthy and as he wins the coaching staff over. But I agree with you. That's a good name to mention and throw in here, that we could see him step up, and it would kind of fit what we're talking about in terms of Javonte Williams being written off as that veteran guy and Tony Pollard being kind of written off, but he has produced in that offense. And now things are going to be much, much better with Dable there with that new coaching staff and with a bunch of the moves that they've made.
Yeah, he was kind of like the last guy I had. I don't know. Do you have any like other dart throws here?
No, that's everybody for us. So that brings us to the finalists, man. And this is going to be the really tough part of it. Like, I'm looking at this. I have six names on my list. I'm looking at producer Colin's notes. He's got five names written down.
Okay.
For me, Rich, I'll throw some of them out. I think you're picking one of the Panthers backs, which at this point, I think most people probably would say Brooks. I still have like a spot in my heart for Chuba Hubbard, but I'm not going to fight everybody on that. Ramondre Stevenson, who we mentioned, I think is in the running. I think if you're taking a Steelers back, Rico Dowdle, though you didn't sound as excited about him. Jordan Mason, again, not super exciting, but a guy that I think could potentially come through if Aaron Jones gets hurt. Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, who we talked up, but really it's kind of pick your poison in the Commanders' backfield. Kenny Gainwell would be the other one there. Is there anyone else? Do you want to make a push for Tony Pollard being named as a finalist since you threw him in as a write-in candidate right at the end?
I think from a workload perspective, I think opening the season, I mean, I think Tony Pollard's workload is a lot stronger than people believe. Maybe it's just me believing it though. So if you're not on board with that, I understand.
No, who would you go with if you were going with your three finalists here? You are the guest.
I am actually.
Who would you go with as your three?
I'm okay with just a Carolina running back. Just I don't really have a pushback on either one. Like a Carolina running back. We're not counting Travion. Are we saying just Travion doesn't count?
yeah, Trayvon's going too high, right? And ADP wise, yeah. he wouldn't make that top 24 cutoff, counts. I don't think.
So he, because like I said, like he's the guy that like scares me when other people have him still more so than these other guys. So
for sure,
I'm okay with Carolina running back. If you want to do Steeler running back, I'm fine with that as well. I would put Pollard at least in contention with those guys. And man, dude, we can't like identify a commander back. Do we just do JCM or White?
That's the problem. I still think JCM has the first crack at it. So to me, I can't get on board with White being that guy because I think White is just the passing down back, and I will be stunned. I'm not going to do the Harmon thing and suggest that I will like eat a pen if something happens, but which happened last year. I don't know if you caught any of that, Rich. Thankfully he didn't have to, but that was something that happened during last season. So yeah, I just don't see White emerging as that like top 20 type. Because I think you're going to have another back involved. And to me, it seems like JCM is the favorite there, but I think Allen is the wild card that could really screw that up and could potentially turn it into a frustrating group. I'm okay. If you want to go Tony Pollard over Rico Dowdle, I'm all right with that. I think Pollard is a pretty good name to throw in there. Didn't quite fit into any of the categories that we talked about, but definitely
right.
Fits the mold of what we're going for here.
I mean, I defer to you in the show. I would say, yeah, if you want to do like Hubbard, if you want to do Dowdle, Pollard, and if you had the fourth guy, go ahead and throw a fourth guy.
I say for me, I mean, that's the thing. And we don't want to leave it here to producer Colin. We don't want him to break the ties here, Rich. So we got to be able to do this on our own. I like the case you made for Pollard, and we're going to include him. You are the guest. We want to make sure that that's covered. I think you made a very strong case for him. I still lean towards Hubbard, but I think most people will go after Brooks. And I think the upside for Brooks, if everything goes his way, is probably higher. And we see a guy emerge and be a potential star coming back from the injuries. And that was one of the things with Javonte Williams, right? The injuries certainly impacted the way people were viewing him last year. So we'll go Jonathan Brooks. We will go Tony Pollard. And are you okay going JCM as the last guy?
Yeah, I think we throw a little bit of a spice. We have like one spicy dude. I guess John the Brooks were qualified, but JCM is a little more spicy.
All right. And then if you're going to pick a winner here, Rich, who would it be? Are you backing the Tony Pollard coming down the straight, blowing past the leaders, and he gets named as the final winner here as who could be this year's Javonte Williams? Or is there somebody else you want to go with there?
I mean, I would lean towards him, especially if you're drafting one of these guys, if you're like thin at running back and you're looking for like that start of the season production. Like, I think you want Tony Pollard with one of these guys, right? Like, because to start the year, you're going to be playing Tony Pollard and you're hoping one of these other guys, like these are the guys you hope as like the season ramps up, like you're bringing it home down the home stretch with a Brooks or a JCM.
I really like that case that we're taking two of them. We gotta pick one though.
I
kind of want to say Jonathan Brooks because I want to back that Panthers backfield. The problem with Brooks is he's so much younger, and that I think that in my head is throwing me off here in terms of like Javonte being that guy. But Javonte wasn't that old, I suppose, right? Like we're talking about a guy that
now 25
he wasn't late 20s. He was like mid 20s, 26 or so. So Brooks. I would probably lean towards Brooks, but I think your approach is very smart here. Take Tony Pollard, take the value there, take Jonathan Brooks where he's going, which is still fairly late. And then late in the season, he takes over for Pollard and away you go. Or if you get completely lucky, you get two guys that potentially come through for you.
Yeah, I mean, us trying to nail this down to the actual guy is pretty thin. So, but yeah, I'm totally
on
board.
It's the way we are, man. This is what it's like even on a night out with us. This is what the conversation ends up being, right?
Yeah. Hopefully we at least provided enough context walking through all those other scenarios that people will run into something and the other 80% that draft all the wrong guys will remember us with the 20% be like, hey, those guys,
exactly.
They got it.
All right. So we're going to award it to the Panthers backfield and we're going to make Jonathan Brooks the figurehead of that backfield, even though I still think there's a chance that Chuba Hubbard could be the one that comes through there. So the Chuba Hubbard, Jonathan Brooks backfield is the one that takes it. Jonathan Brooks is the guy that we see potentially coming through, emerging as the starter and being a strong fantasy asset as the season goes along here. Would love to see that. Would be a great story for a guy that's coming off of so many injuries and who was kind of written off a couple of years ago to come back. If he can get his career back on track, it would be great to see. And there you have it. And you crushed it as always, Rich, man. Thank you for doing this. It is always great talking to you, dude. And I hope we're going to get another chance this summer at the Fantasy Expo to hang out. We haven't talked about this yet, but if you are going to be there, I will see you there, man. Really appreciate you and everything that you do. That's it for us, though. A reminder before we go, we are one pod a week through mid-July, and our shows will be dropping at 4 p.m. Eastern on Wednesdays. Big thanks again to Rich Rebar. Big thanks to producer Colin and everybody behind the scenes. Boone June will continue next week, but until then, we are out.